This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by Cubs Insider. We're coming to you on a Monday night, May 1st. Wow, time is going by fast. And that does conclude the first month of baseball. We're coming at you a little bit late. Corey was in Boston for the Cubs series, and our schedules just didn't mesh. So we usually do this once or right after every series. So we did miss a series, so we apologize for that. But Corey, like I said, was at the Boston series. And Corey, anything that you want to mention about Fenway? That was your first time there.
Yeah, for sure. I did want to kind of add to that, though. We do appreciate everybody bearing with us. Mostly, you know, my deal, but traveling to and from Boston, it's like a 6-hour flight. So we just didn't have time to get the show out. If you watched the Phillies game tonight, hopefully you didn't miss our preview when you were watching the Cubs get drubbed by the Phillies tonight. So we'll be back on the normal schedule. Appreciate y'all bearing with really me. But yeah, it was great. I had never been to Boston as a city before, let alone Fenway. And it was a really great experience. I quite enjoyed the ballpark. It's very similar. You know, I don't know how many of you listening have been to both Wrigley and Fenway, but it's, a lot of similarities. Fenway, obviously, a bit more of a unique layout with the wall and just sort of the way the outfield is set up. But a lot of similarities. You know, you can be under the awning. There's poles potentially blocking certain portions of your view. It has that old rustic feel. The seats are right on top of each other. They're right on top of the field. And, you know, of course, my favorite element, which is very similar to Wrigley Field, is that it's, you know, really no frills. You know, they do some things on the video boards and, you know, some music stuff, but otherwise they kind of assume you're there to watch a baseball game and they leave you alone. So
are the Red Sox fans?
I didn't have any issues with it. We're coming to you on Monday night, so if you've checked ESPN, you've seen that Adam Jones did not have a very good experience at Fenway Park tonight.
Yeah.
Not going to touch on that, but don't do that. Moral of that story.
Yeah.
I didn't really have any issue with it. You know, I thought it was, for the most part, you know, and I'm sure you could find different experiences from different people, but for the most part, I thought everybody was there to, you know, kind of exactly what I was doing. This is a marquee matchup. We had a couple night games, obviously the Sunday night game on Sunday, Classic Park, two teams that don't play each other very often. And it was, it was a very fun atmosphere to be a part of. A couple of the friends that I went with who aren't Cubs fans or Red Sox fans, you know, were kind of marveling that it, felt like a playoff game in April, each of those games, which was really cool. And yeah, I mean, I had a good experience, you know, some playful ribbing, but as I was, you know, my parents asked about that as well. And I was just like, to be honest with you, if people were trying to get at me, it really just rolls off me at this point. And I don't know if I've told these stories on this podcast before, but I, growing up and really up until the Cubs won the World Series, I will get in an argument and potentially a fight at a baseball game. If you want to come at me about the Cubs, I will come back at you. I've never been in any specific physical altercations, but I have been in many of a, you know, cursing, swearing match.
Swearing at people?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, you know, especially when I was younger, my dad had to, you know, grab me away because he was going to be the person that was going to have to answer for it. So, but I'm just saying, man, don't talk about Mark Pryor that way. You know?
I mean, like, can you give any more details to one particular
example?
My
favorite one, I think the Cubs were out in, you know, when we first moved out to L.A., so probably like 2005, I'm still rocking the Mark Pryor number 22. And, you know, at this time I'm what, like 13, 14.
Yeah.
And you know, this guy just the whole game, just giving me nonsense, giving, you know, my brother, you know, cause we're all on Cub stuff. you know, just giving us nonsense the whole game, talking about Pryor. He was, you know, mouthing off about, you know, him being on the DL or, you know, not even think he was on the team anymore at that point. But, and, you know, just as we were leaving, I just sort of went off on the dude. And, you know, my dad's like grabbing me going like, can you not do that? Like, you're not going to have to deal with this. I'm going to have to deal with this. But I'm just like, F you, like, don't effing talk to me, you know, you piece of whatever.
Yeah.
My dad loves to tell that story, especially now that he has an association with the Dodgers.
Wait,
so
how old were you?
Like 13 or 14. and you know, that's what I said to my dad. He's like, you know, you got to stop that. You can't do stuff like that. And I'm like, no, like, don't come at me about Mark Pryor. Like, get out of here. But so, you know, just, all told, you know, now it's like, you know, if we're in Boston and somebody says, oh, Cubs suck or something like that, I'm like, they don't though, but okay, you know, have a good day. Like, I you know, I'm like walking around in a hat that says they just won the World Series. Like, I just don't really care.
Yeah.
But it was a good experience. I didn't come across anybody that was, you know, really trying to antagonize everything. I think it was, you know, there was a couple times where I think tensions were a little high just because you could tell that the Red Sox fans were, you know, they had to defend their turf. You know, there was an awful lot of Cubs fans there. There was a couple, you know, really loud MVP chants for Chris Bryant. You know, let's go Cubs, and they're, you know, the Red Sox fans trying to drown it out with booze and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, but no, it was a great time. It was a great weekend. And again, you know, it was a really good atmosphere, you know, people, you know, just kind of really buying into the hype of those games. And, it was a good time. You know, I would have preferred better outcomes, obviously, but, you know, that was one where I'm not super distraught over taking one of three in Boston against the Red Sox.
For the most part, they played all right, too. I mean, you take away that eighth inning
for sure.
Yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, and especially, like, I don't watch too much American League baseball. I pay attention a little bit just because of, you know, like, fantasy baseball or highlights or whatever. But, you know, I was, you know, it's especially one of those things where, you know, if you're expecting to take two or three or sweep them and stuff in their own ballpark, I just had to take a look at their one through three hitters one time. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't going to be so great. But yeah, no, it was a great experience. I think it'll be a bit of a trend now, you know, so if you can get to any of these games, these kind of like marquee matchups, especially when the Cubs are on the road, I would encourage it. If you have a propensity to getting shouting matches, you know, maybe steer clear of it. I don't know. That's up to you. But
have you ever been in one at Dodger Stadium? We're coming up now.
Yeah, the one I was just telling you at was
I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, sorry. I think I said, like, you know, it was right when we moved to LA. Yeah, that was Dodger Stadium. Of course it was Dodger Stadium, Brendan. Come on.
Of course.
Well,
control yourself in 2 weeks now, or 3 weeks, whenever it is.
No, that's what I'm saying. Now that they won the World Series, I'm like, whatever. You can, Brendan. Wait, hold on. Now, were you telling me for when the Cubs come here?
Yeah,
Brendan. You know, I'm dying for that. I have the line ready to go, and I've told it to you before. I'm dying to get in a verbal confrontation at Dodger Stadium.
Oh my God, I'm not going to be anywhere near you,
Brendan. All I'm saying is, imagine being a fan of a team that has not won a World Series this century. Come on, pathetic.
You're gonna get killed, man.
I'm crying. Yeah. Well, you know,
there's just some fans that you just don't want to engage. Let's just put it that way. And the majority of Dodger fans are included in that category.
Yeah. So anyway, but all that being said, you know, like, I know they're playing the Yankees this weekend. There's some other really cool matchups. And, you know, if you're thinking about
that's
a game
fun
to go to or whatever, I would encourage trying to get to one of these games where, you know, it's a big hyped matchup. It was fun. The Cubs fans were out in full force trying to make themselves heard. So it was a good time.
I mean, it was noticeable, too, on the broadcast. I mean,
yeah,
Ryan,
I did hear
the homers and, you know, the chants and whatnot. So I think most fans who watched the game were able to really notice it. And we'll get into the series for the Yankees after this one's over, but that will be fun this weekend as well. But let's get into the team. There's been a lot of iffy play. I know a lot of frustrated Cubs fans on the Twitter. I posed this poll a few days ago, and the question I put out on Twitter was, which Cubs player are you most concerned about? Because granted, there are justifiable concerns. So I was curious in which player got the most votes. So I put Javi Baez, Ben Zobrist, Kyle Hendricks, or no player. And 107 people voted. It was a trending topic worldwide. And 52% voted for Javi Baez, 8% voted for Ben Zobrist, 7% voted for Kyle Hendricks, and then 33% voted for no player. So either you're concerned about Javi Baez or you're especially concerned about no one, which is more or less what I thought would be the case. I mean, you get your fans who are concerned about Schwarber and some other guys, and especially more recently, but that's basically it. Now, we did see Javi go yard tonight, and he got the last 2 days off. What is your perspective on Javi's current play?
Well, I mean, this isn't where he wants to be. He's clearly, the discipline at the plate has gone the wrong way, at least to start this season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we've talked about it before. We're not seeing as much of him kind of jumping on the pitches that he can handle and, you know, just trying to make any form of contact to just try to make something happen.
Yeah, at times it looks like he's just up there guessing, you know?
Right. Well, and, you know, it's always strange. And it was a similar setup and result as when he wins that NLDS in San Francisco. But tonight, who on earth in the Phillies wrote the scouting report that told them to throw a fastball on an 0-2 pitch?
I was thinking the same thing. Was it Hunter Strickland who gave him that base?
Yeah, same thing. It's totally unacceptable if you're the Phillies. Obviously, it's a whatever game. You're just trying to throw strikes at that point. But still, like, I mean, you could throw the pitch in the other dugout and he might swing at it. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Anyway.
We'll take it.
But
though.
Look, yeah. But look, I have said this to you. We've talked about this before. You know, look, I tried, and I think we tried before the season to temper everyone's expectations with Javier Baez. If you recall back to our season preview show, when we were asked who the biggest bust candidate was, I said Javi Baez.
And that doesn't mean we're projecting bust. We're just, you know, the most likely candidate to regress a little bit.
And what I said at the time was, he's not really a bust because what I believe he's going to do is a valuable player and one that I want on this team and one that I want getting 400, 500, whatever plate appearances. That being said, people who maybe just watch the playoffs and the World Baseball Classic are not going to see that player. And yeah. I firmly believe that then. And, you know, I'm not like right now, it's been a month, but this is just kind of the player that he is. And I think that we saw flashes of absolute greatness, which I think sums up Javi Baez. He has some incredible talent, incredible tools. And when he's locked in, he is an unbelievable, like, earth-shattering, everyone in the world talking about type of player, right? And we saw that a number of times over the last several months.
Yeah.
But this plate discipline thing has been with him his whole career, and it's not likely something that's ever going to go away. It can always be adjusted and improved, decline, whatever. But you know, so I'm not really concerned because this is something I was at least moderately expecting. It's worse at the plate than I was expecting and hoping for. But that being said, you know, this is just, he's just, I think, one of these kinds of players. He's going to have to readjust and hopefully the days off helped, and hopefully, you know, sending one to the opposite field tonight kind of gets him going. He was 2-for-4 tonight. Scored 2 runs, and you know, hopefully that just gets him going, and and we just sort of start to see the numbers bump up. But yeah, I don't even mean it to like toot our own horn, but it's just like I just feel like some people are like taken aback by this and they're freaking out, and you see all sorts of crazy suggestions, right? They got to trade him, they got to send him down, they got to do this, they got to do that. And it's just like, nah, like this is who he is, yeah. You know, he, and we've had players like this before. We're going to welcome one of them back this weekend in Starlin Castro. And this is not me drawing a straight line from Javi Baez to Starlin Castro, but Starlin Castro is lighting the world on fire right now. I think he's hitting like, you know, like 350 or something with like a 1100 OPS or something crazy.
Yeah.
And that doesn't surprise me. And I don't really, y'all have heard me before. I'm not the biggest Castro fan, and I was pretty pleased when they got rid of him. But I'm not surprised he's hitting this well because he's capable of it. I won't be surprised when he hits 120 for the next 3 months because he's also capable of that. And I just, you know, and Javi's just a similar player. And the benefit of Javi is that he doesn't really screw around in the field or on the bases. He's a lot better in those regards than Castro. And you just gotta take the peaks and the valleys with the hitting, try to make adjustments, try to put him in the most favorable situations you can. And, you know, I mean, he's just one of those guys. You're going to get what you get.
Yeah. You know, I'll reiterate everything you just said. And if Javi can just taper down a little bit, just a little bit, I think it will alleviate some people's concerns. But if you're out there expecting a 300 batting average and 25 homers from Javi, you're going to be sorely disappointed. You know, 450, 500 plate appearances, 15 to 20 homers, and a 270 batting average, which is kind of what he did last year, is basically what you're going to get out of a player like this. Now, to be concerned, genuinely concerned about him, I can see where you're coming from, but I think you just need to temper down your expectations for him. Along the same lines, though, I've seen, this is especially more true in the last probably 3 or 4 days, especially since some of the national media people out there keep bringing it up, but Kyle Schwarber is struggling. He's still batting leadoff. He's still facing lefties. And people have called for him not to bat leadoff, to not face lefties, to even potentially go into a platoon role, I've seen. So we have Kyle Schwarber here who's, look, he's not performing as well as we expected. Now, how do we interpret this? I have a different perspective than maybe you, Corey, but going forward, how do we handle the Schwarber situation?
Yeah, so again, like with Javi, I'm not really concerned.
No, neither am I.
The first thing that I would point out, and this is something that I saw some smart people discussing, I think on Twitter, but you know, you got to remember, this guy has like next to no major league experience.
He has never played one full year.
I know. We all love what he did in the World Series and stuff, but he was called up in what, June of his rookie year?
Yes. And then he went back down.
Right. So he wasn't even up the full year and then plays a total of, what, 8 games, including the World Series last year?
I mean, yeah.
So, you know, this, you got to factor that in. Again, I know it's frustrating. His team just won the World Series. People want this team in first place, up by 50 games. You know, the division is bad. A lot of the league is bad right now. And, benefiting the Cubs, who have come out of the gate slow. But,
yeah.
You know, we got to remember where some of these guys are. And, you know, it's sort of the same with Javi. Like, Javi doesn't have that much major league experience either, you know. So, and I know we've touched
much
on that
more
before.
Than Schwarber, though.
I mean, yes, much more than
which,
Schwarber.
Which highlights the fact that Schwarber hasn't played that much.
Right. You know? But I just bring that up to reiterate, you know, like, last year went really, really well, folks. Like, I'm not saying I'm not annoyed with this or watching a game like tonight. I'm not, like, you know, beating my brains in.
But, off. Yeah.
You know, we got to remember that a lot of these guys are 23, 24, 25 years old and just don't have a lot of experience. So there's just going to be these growing pains. As far as where we go with Schwarber from here, currently right now, and I don't know if this is updated. I don't know why these websites can't like update the slash lines until the morning, but they just don't sometimes. So I'm reading his slash line at 1209.
Are you on Fangraphs or a different
Los
site?
Angeles. I'm on MLB.com. It's so he's slashing. He's got a 196 average with a 322 on base percentage and a 652 OPS.
Yeah, it's disappointing. That's not good.
Yes, right. So
I would like to see.
Yeah, I'm not concerned. I think going forward, I'd love to see him get a day off. I don't know that he's had one day off this entire year. I'd like to see that.
Yeah,
I think
right.
We've seen some of these other guys get more, you know, bias.
No, he had one day off where Caesar batted lead off. That was it.
Yes, you're right. And even in that game, I think he pinch hit.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him get some rest. You know, he's like Baez. I know they want him to hit left-handed pitching and just be the leadoff hitter, but, you know, hitting left-handed pitching has always sort of been a thing with him. And I'm not saying, you know, you sit him against lefties or whatever, but just an occasional day off, I think, would be nice. As far as, you know, where he is in the leadoff hitter, I know I floated the idea to you maybe moving him out of it just for a little bit. I'm not necessarily dead set on it. It was just sort of an idea I was tossing out. You know, maybe just get him somewhere where all he is focused on is hitting, not necessarily who he's hitting in front of, whether he needs to get on base, see pitches, you know, work the starting pitcher to start the game, whatever. And I know you brought up, and it was a good point, I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know if him being the leadoff hitter and having a sort of different set of responsibilities factors into this at all. He might
That's a discussion between he and Joe Maddon. You know,
we can't know that.
Yeah, and my perspective is, okay, and I think Joe has a pretty good social IQ in that he can really, from one conversation, kind of draw conclusions of what he needs to do.
Yeah.
So I think if they were to sit down and Joe has an honest discussion about Schwarber's plate approach, discipline, whatever, and Schwarber's like, you know what, yeah, maybe I am changing up how I'm approaching some of these at-bats, then maybe I personally would like Schwarber just to move down in the order and maybe reacclimate himself. That's different. But if Joe comes away from a conversation like that, and he's confident that batting Schwarber leadoff is in no way hindering his development or changing his approach, then I don't think there's any reason to move him. With that said, there's several reasons why I'm not concerned. Number one, do you think Schwarber suddenly lost his power? Like, let's not kid ourselves. The power is still there. Look at the guy. Number two, his plate discipline, and you can. You know, you watch most of the games, and I try to watch most of the games. I don't come away from some of his at-bats thinking, what the hell are you doing? Like, what are you swinging at? And if you look
And, you know, his on-base percentage is 130 points higher than his batting.
Right, and he's still seeing, you know, 4.5 pitches per plate appearance. And even more importantly, his contact rate is 76% as of yesterday. I mean, we're talking basically league average, which is a dramatic improvement from his rookie days. So if you were to take away a lot of his surface numbers, like batting average or whatnot, and just look at some of the peripherals, without me knowing what his slash line is, I would think he's having a pretty damn good year. With that being said, at the same time, he's not making strong contact. A lot of, from what I've seen, and I can probably look at the numbers and it would validate my eyes, it looks like he's missing a lot of fastballs down and in, and he's hitting pop-ups to the left side of the field. I've seen that. I can tell you three or four instances off the top of my head just within these last five games where he's done that. So I personally try to look at this more from, like, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say a holistic point of view, but you look for players and you want to make sure their core traits are still there. And Schwarber's core trait is hitting the ball far. Does he possess the ability to hit the ball far? Yes. Okay. If that is still there, then I'm not going to be concerned. I would be concerned if suddenly he's coming back from, if he sprained his knee again, for example, then yeah, I'm going to be concerned about his power if he's not hitting the ball that far. But for the most part, as long as you keep swinging at good pitches, which he's doing, and eventually those pop-ups that we're seeing, they're going to turn into balls in the gaps and balls over the fence. It's only a matter of time. As far as the lefty thing goes, yeah, maybe give him a few days off here and there, but how do you get better against lefties? You have to face lefties. How did Rizzo go from one of the league's worst lefty hitting batter to the best lefty hitting batter? I don't know if you remember this, Corey. It was 2013. He was coming off a pretty bad year, and I used to frequently visit a lot of Cubs forums, and that was the central theme that offseason, where they were comparing him to Adam LaRoche, and who had massive splits, and what would the Cubs do here on out? And there were instances with Rizzo where, while the overall numbers didn't look great against lefties, there were certain at-bats and certain homers where he hit the hell out of the ball. And all he needed to do was see more batters. He talked with Eric Hinsky, and he moved close to home plate, crowded the plate. Now look at him, one of the league's best lefty-hitting batters. So I'm a firm believer, if you want to get better and you want to fine-tune your ability to recognize pitches, you need to see those pitches. And the Cubs can afford Schwarber maybe going through some growing pains because they have Rizzo and Bryant and Zobrist and Hayward's playing well. They have so many batters that can pick him up. It's worth the growing pains.
I'm with you. I don't necessarily. I didn't mean like sitting him against left.
At this point,
he's just playing every day, and it's just perhaps a day off here and there might.
I'm surprised he hasn't gotten more than one day off. I mean, Russell's gotten a day off. I think KB got a day off.
I think Joe is just trying to grind him through it. You know, I think he knows that him and Baez have, other guys too, but they have things they got to work through and get through, and he's just going to do it. You know, I know he said in the video that you sent me today that he's thrilled with the way that this season has started. So, now granted, he can say whatever he wants. I don't know how he actually feels.
I mean, is Madden ever visibly upset? Like, does he actually?
Yeah, and I mean, and I don't doubt him. I think that, again, last year was an unbelievable start, and you cannot ask for more, right? They won the division in, April or May, basically.
Yeah.
This just isn't what we've seen so far, and it's just they're working on stuff. You know, I do think it's, now that I'm thinking about it, I do think it's amusing that, we found other things to talk about than Jason Hayward, though. So that's pretty good, right?
Yeah. I can't be more happy with Hayward's start. He can still maybe, fine-tune some things, but pretty good with Hayward. Corey, is there any one player, though, like you're actually concerned about? There has to be one.
I have one. Yeah, I mean, I've said this before. You want to try this? Should we both say it on three, and we'll see we'll see where we get?
Yeah, count down from three, and at one, we'll say it.
Okay, one. Oh, count down from three, sorry.
Yeah.
all right, three, two, one,
Hendricks.
John Lackey.
I am concerned about Lackey, though, too. But I'm not.
It's also not even necessary. And I think I said this. So not to harp on this like I did last week. I'm not even necessarily concerned. I guess I'm not concerned with like anything specifically. I guess I'm concerned that he's of a certain age and quality where this might just be what we get. And it stinks, and I'm pretty sick of it.
I'm pretty confident that John Lackey will be, at best, average. More than likely, he'll be below average this year.
Yeah, and it's also just one of those where, like, I'm telling you, man, one of these games, I'm going to get arrested. When the Cubs score runs and he gives them right back, I can't even explain to you. I'm getting angry even just bringing it up. It drives me crazy, man.
You're going to get arrested at that L.A. game. I know you. With Lackey giving up bombs, Dodger fans talking smack. It's going to happen.
I want to jump in before we continue on that note. An interesting tweet from Jeff Zimmerman from FanGraphs, amongst others. Before April 22nd, Kyle Schwarber, a 90.3 average exit velocity and an average launch angle of 19.5 degrees.
What was that date again?
April 22nd.
Okay, April 22nd. Okay.
Post April 22nd,
yeah.
A 74.5 average exit velocity and an average launch angle of 15.0.
Yeah, he's hit a lot of weak rounders to the right side, a lot of pop-ups. Yep.
You know, and look, I think that's, you know, so you're talking April 22nd, so we're probably talking about maybe like 20 at-bats or something 20, like that where he hits the ball, something like that. So, you know, not like, oh my God, let's look at these stats. But just, you know, an interesting thing to note. I don't think anything in particular happened on April 22nd. I mean, I think we would all have figured it out by now. But
I mean, there's a difference between playing bad.
Thought.
Yeah, there's a difference between playing bad and then projecting bad.
It's just been a bad stretch.
It's been a bad stretch. Look, he's going to hit the ball hard. It's going to happen. Just look at him. It's gonna,
right. And we do concerned. All remember, you know, look, Chris Bryant was hitting, what, 215, like literally a week ago?
He went over his first 14.
Well, yeah, now he's, you know, he's back to that normal slash line and everybody's, you know, fine about it. So back to the starting pitching. And actually, I should have been with you on this because I was monitoring the gun at Fenway when Hendricks was pitching. You know,
you're turning into me.
Well, and it was, I think at this point, it's just my first thought, you know, and I just see that first 85. I'm like, ugh,
yeah,
God, darn it. And I think, what was that, Saturday?
That was
That was Sunday. That was a Sunday night baseball game, yeah.
Yeah, well.
I thought that was, you know, we do, he keeps getting better in terms of how he's pitching and I think the general execution. And you know, you can touch on this a little further, but the main problem for Hendricks right now, at least in my eyes, is exactly what you saw with Hanley Ramirez, right? When his, because again, I think each progressive start, his location has been better, just his general performance has been better. I think we're veering more towards the weak contact rather than at the beginning we were seeing an awful lot of hard contact. Again, still not where he wants to be or where we want him to be. But the main problem when you're throwing, what is he throwing, like 3 miles an hour slower than
about two and a half. Yeah.
When you make a pitch like that to Hanley Ramirez, y'all saw the result. It will get murdered. Okay. So that's the main problem for me. And I know I mentioned it the last time too, but you know, he's throwing an 85 mile an hour fastball with a 78 to 79 mile an hour changeup. That's not the difference that you know, got him to where he was last year. You know, it's got to be closer to like 10 miles an hour for him to really play his mind games and change the hitter's thought process, their eye level, all that other stuff. So I don't know what's up there. I really don't.
It's
I'm a little concerned about it. I'm glad that he's trending in a more positive direction. But, you know, if he's not going to up the velo and get those, you know, pitch differences where he needs them to be, we are probably going to have to get used to, like, seeing him give up at least one, like, absolute bomb a game. Because it just – there's no margin for error with an 85-mile-an-hour fastball.
The main problem with having a fastball this slow is that it's going to – just obliterate the effectiveness of his changeup. And that's exactly what we're seeing. We saw Hendricks go from having one of the league's best changeups since he entered the league to a changeup that is, by swings per whiffs standards, below average. So his overall whiff rate with the changeup last year was 26%. This year, it's 13%. So half of the whiffs that he is used to getting have disappeared. That's a huge issue. So, and for someone who relies on pinpointing and throwing darts at the corner of the plate and then following up with a really quality changeup, you don't have that margin of error with your fastball. Someone like Arrieta, and this is a good contrast, someone like Arrieta can get away throwing 92 compared to 95. The movement is insane. The release point is insane. He has a wicked curveball. He's got even a good changeup, even though he doesn't use it, and he has a wicked slider. Hendricks has a sinker, a changeup, and an occasional curveball and four seam. That's who he is. So if he loses even more than one tick, I'm a little concerned. And he was the lowest candidate for regression on my list. I thought maybe Arrieta, based on what we saw, would continue to regress, and Lackey with his age, and we didn't know what we're going to get with our fifth starter. And I mean, Lester, he is getting older, Corey. I don't want to piss you off, but you just never know with older pitchers. Even though Lester looks fantastic, I have no concerns about Lester.
Brendan, I can drive. I can be in LA in 30 minutes. You want to keep talking about John like that?
But Lester's been great. But the point I'm making is, I did not expect this to happen. Did not expect this to happen. Do I think it will continue? I don't know. I really don't. This has been five starts now, and he's averaging 86 miles an hour. And even his last start, he was at 86.2. I'm reading on Brooks Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Corey. I will admit, deep down inside, the rotation is a little disconcerting. I don't know if you share the same sentiment with me, but you know, if Arrieta is the same Arrieta from the second half of last year, I might actually be a little concerned about the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's valid. I think that they're. You know, again, we turn over, you know, into a new month. We'll see. Hopefully the weather warms up and we see, you know, a shift in that. But, you know, again, Brett Anderson's going to give you what he gives you. I think
I don't care about Brett Anderson.
Right. But I'm saying, you know, he's going to give you what he's going to give you. Some starts are going to be pretty good. Some starts are going to be pretty awful. I wouldn't, you know, worry too much about the one tonight. Not to make excuses or make excuses for him, but
maybe he's pitching.
You know, he was pitching in a monsoon. That first inning was a total joke. The MLB should not let things like that occur. I don't know what on earth they were doing on that field, but you know, he is what he is. But Lackey looks worse. I just don't think you can deny that. Like he at times since he's been a Cub, he's looked pretty good. Like, you know, kind of what you envisioned when they got him or were hoping for. He's looked pretty bad. Yeah. He was bad in the playoffs. He's looked pretty bad so far this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing varying degrees of effectiveness and whatever from these other three guys. So, yeah, I think it's pretty valid to at least, you know, express some concern, start thinking about it, wondering if they – you know, have some sort of backup plan or other things that they might consider. You know, we're just going to have to see how it plays out. I would certainly hope that whatever's, you know, going on with Hendricks gets sorted out, or we at least figure out what it is.
Yeah, if he can just, just regain some of that stuff next start, he would alleviate my concerns quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think Lester's one of those guys where, you know, he's getting older. The stuff is going to get worse. That's just how human beings work.
Not this year,
though. I trust him to figure it out with whatever he has. I don't really think about him too much. You know, if he's not as good as he was last year, that's fine. He's still going to be very good. You're still starting him in the playoffs, yada, yada, like whatever.
Eddie Butler a chance?
Yeah, I was gonna bring him up. I was just gonna finish on Arrieta. You know, he's looked good. We'll see. You know, he was certainly not good the other night in Boston.
No, that was the anomaly, though. I mean, all of his other starts have been pretty good. And before we go on to Butler, I do want to point out that going into that start in Boston, Arrieta's K per nine and his base on balls per nine were both better at that point than his entire Cy Young season. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy who lost a few ticks in the velocity, but for that stretch, looked pretty damn good. I mean,
yeah, for like, sure. So, you know, we'll see. It's the top of the rotation right now is not where it was last year, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say it's fair to be a little, you know, at least think about it, be a little concerned.
It's on my mind.
You know, one thing, and we didn't really talk about it that much, and it's obviously getting old. I'm sure all of you were very sick of it. But they're not going to give up 100 runs every first inning for the rest of the year. That's something that'll,
really?
You know, I guess I can't guarantee that. But I think that's the type of thing that's going to, you know, get back to normal and perhaps change things around a little bit. Because that certainly doesn't help. And it's a terrible trend to have picked up on. But yeah, we'll just have to see. I mean, I think the real crux of that concern, I do agree with you, kind of lies with Kyle Hendricks, because yeah. If he's closer to, you know, an average type pitcher, it definitely
a lot of anxiety.
Well, and it just definitely changes how you view this team, and I think you know, because again, you know, and not to go on it too much, but you know, the rotation was a huge portion of what they did last year. They had incredible numbers. You know, they were didn't they have like the lowest staff ERA since some absurd period of time, like you know, by certain points in of last year. So it's certainly something that I think needs to be looked at. But you know, we're just gonna have to keep an eye on these things and hope that a guy like Hendricks can figure it out. And if John Lackey is going to be bad, you know, think about a different option. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't, you know, really know what they think of him or how rigid they are, and that, you know, he's just a guy that they're throwing out there every fifth day. I don't know. But
yeah, it kind of depends, too, where the team is at. You know, if they're 15 games above 500 come July, then I'm cool with giving John Lackey every chance he can to redeem himself.
Right.
Because it is John Lackey, and if he's on his game, he's an above-average pitcher. So
right.
I'm cool with that. But if we're going into July and there are genuine, you know, there are real issues with the rotation, then you got to start thinking about maybe giving someone like Butler a chance, or looking outside the organization for not a huge splash, but just something that can maybe get by even in a playoff scenario. But that's,
yeah.
Honestly, I don't even feel comfortable thinking about that far ahead. But the only reason why I brought that up is that it is in the back of my mind that all of these issues with the rotation are happening at the same time. And that's one area that could really hold this team back, which I don't think will be an issue going forward. It's just on the back of my mind. But
yeah, and look, they have the resources to deal with it. I don't think anybody wants them to have to do that, but you know, Theo's not just going to let this team be plagued by some sort of problem. They didn't let it happen last year with the back end of the bullpen. They wouldn't let it happen if it was the starting rotation this time. So, you know, your sort of degree of urgency and what you're willing to part with might change depending on, you know, kind of how some of these things go. But the Cubs have the resources to do it, and I'm confident that they would if they needed to. I did want to point out, you know, you mentioned Eddie Butler, who I'm going to read a tweet from Matt Clapp at the Blog Finds. If you don't follow Matt, you're really making a mistake. I'm pretty sure he's the best follow on Cubs Twitter. But
what about me?
Anyway, moving on to the tweet from Matt.
And this concludes our last episode.
Yeah, he has a 1.46 ERA in AAA. But he is also only striking out 4 per 9.
Yeah.
So, and I don't mean that to say, you know, don't try him or whatever, but you know, if you're looking at him going, when's this guy going to get a chance? You know, he's got a sub 2 ERA. I think some of the peripherals, you know, might, maybe temper that excitement, but you know, look, he's a guy that we've been talking about on here since spring training. If it comes to it, I think certainly worth giving a look. He's, you know, been up. I think he was up with Colorado at certain points in his career. So,
yeah.
You know, if it comes to that, we'll see. But just thought that was an interesting note.
Yeah, you know, with Butler, I'm less concerned about the numbers, even ERA and K per nine and all that stuff, as I'm more interested in the stuff, kind of the scattering reports, because once you get to the bigs, one, you have a completely different pitching coach with a completely different data set, with completely different catchers. A lot of it changes. So the difference between a 4K per nine and a 6K per nine can happen once you get to this level. Not to, you know, berate you over bring that up. But I'm just not concerned about the K per nine being four. But with that being said, let's summarize this Phillies series, and then we'll head off. So tomorrow you have Helixson versus Lester, 5:05 start time LA, 7:05 Chicago time.
I don't think anybody needs you to read the Pacific time.
I was on my phone, and yeah. Anyway, and then if you don't know by now, I have a very time challenged. But moving on, and then after that starts for Lester, Arrieta will follow him up in the Wednesday game, and he'll face Jared Eichhoff. And then we have, was it Lackey after that? Yes. And then they'll play New York this weekend. So, I mean, I guess, Corey, the one thing to look for is, not giving up runs in the first inning, right?
Yeah, that's got to stop, yeah. Especially for an offense. You know, as we've talked about it all works together. You know, that's terrible for a team with young guys trying to make adjustments and, you know, going through some growing pains and stuff like that. Going down, you know, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, it's a killer. It's just a killer all around. So
yeah,
that's definitely got to stop. You got to give the offense, especially at home, you got to let the offense come up sometimes with a chance to give you some runs, sort of settle everything down. And, you know, I think that helps. And we, you know, we've seen it, especially last year and in 2015. Sometimes you just need that one game, you know, to kind of get the floodgates going and get everybody on the right page. But yeah, I mean, I'd be looking for exactly what, you know, we've been talking about. See what they do with Schwarber. See if Baez can kind of, you know, maybe this 2-for-4 game with a home run jumpstarts him a little bit. We start to see that trending the other way. We'll be watching all of the pitchers' velos all the time. If you don't follow Brendan on Twitter, I'm sure he'll keep you abreast of all that.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, look, I mean, you want to be winning games at home against the Phillies. So that's just something that, you know, you can't really deny. No offense to the Phillies, but you got to be winning games. You know, it's one thing, like I said at the beginning, to go to Boston and not necessarily be too distraught when they only win one game against a very good Red Sox team in Boston. You got a four-game series against the Phillies in Chicago. At this point, they really need to win the next three games. And they don't need to do anything, but they should not be splitting series at home with the Philadelphia Phillies. So that would be where my focus is. The bullpen has been very good. Justin Grimm going to have to figure some stuff out. But on the whole, the bullpen has been very good. Since last Monday, they have really good numbers. You know, you take out that Uehara issue. I know it was talked about a lot that, you know, his really only bad outings have come on no rest. So I would imagine Joe got that memo. We won't be seeing it much anymore, if at all. But the bullpen's been very good. And I only have one other note. So if you have anything you want to wrap up on, I can close this out.
No, I'm good. Close this out.
I am going to close this out reading a tweet from Patrick Mooney, of course, of Comcast Sportsnet Chicago. If you did not see earlier today, Miguel Montero and his wife passed their United States citizenship test. So if you want to tweet a congratulations to the Montero clan, you can do that. But this tweet from Patrick reads as follows. After passing U.S. citizenship test, Miguel Montero said he saw Ryan Dempster and, quote, I told him, hey, get out of my country.
We will talk to you guys. Is that it? Did I ruin it?
No, that is it. Dempster, obviously, from Canada. So Miguel Montero asserting his new American pride and telling Dempster to get out.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. This has been the Cubs-related podcast. Also, if you do not already, you can follow this podcast on iTunes. You can go to the iTunes store on your phone or just iTunes on your computer. Search Cubs Related in the search bar and we'll be the first podcast that comes up. All you need to do is click subscribe and the podcast automatically get downloaded, or you get a notification when we actually post new podcasts, which is minutes after I press stop on this recording. So,
because I know some of you want to hear us freaking out about Kyle Hendricks' velo as soon as you can.
I mean, who wouldn't? And then if you feel so inclined to, go ahead and leave us a mildly nice comment on iTunes. That would be fantastic. And try to say nice things about Corey, even though sometimes it's very difficult to. But on that note, we'll talk to you guys before the Yankee series.